Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Claudia Monticelli with another episode of Multiple Voices. My Multiple Voices podcast, true to its name, includes different series. For example, we have the Voices of Love, where we discuss relationships, the voice of empowerment, the voice of laughter and play, the voice of pleasure, and the magical voice of archetypes and how they change the way we live. But we also have the voice of memory that includes everything from history to discussions of past life regression. There's also writing voices, where we interview both seasoned writers and authors who have just started getting their feet wet with writing, and we learn what can work for you as potential writers. Our series called Voice of the Spirit discusses different forms of spirituality and religion. And then Channeling Voices is a series that covers what happens when you channel, but is also extended to mediumship. Take a moment to review this podcast if you've enjoyed listening, and leave a hearty 5 stars. I'd appreciate it. Enjoy your listening. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's Claudia Monticelli here with another episode of my podcast, Multiple Voices. And today, as you can see, I have another guest, and this is Nathaniel Novosel. And Nathaniel's talking to us now from Myrtle Beach. Hi, Nathaniel. Say hello to the audience.
Hey, it's great to speak with you, and thank you all for listening.
Good. I'm glad to have you here. Just let me briefly tell you a little bit about him. He's a professional researcher, and I love to read that. A professional researcher and advisor with over 20 years of experience studying individual and group behavior. So sort of like a sociologist in many respects, right, Nathaniel?
Evolutionary psychology is my personal passion. Organizational leadership and psychology are my professional credentials. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So over that time, he has researched psychology, evolutionary biology, organizational best practices, leadership, decision making, and going on and on and on. But I don't want to say that because he'll have plenty to talk about. Now, he spent much of his career using the insights from his research to help world leading executives solve their most pressing organizational challenges. Now, you know, I have to say this, and I'd like to lead with this. You're an author, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the title of your book is?
The Meaning of Life, A Guide to Finding Your Life's Purpose.
Okay. Now, them's big words, right? Yeah. The meaning of life. I mean, I would imagine it's a tome. I mean, it's, you know, 5,000 pages, the meaning of life. And from the outside, you know, what is the meaning of life? What kind of school of thought, you know? So we're going to first talk a little about a little bit of other topics, and we'll lead into the book, which is probably the result of your research and your practice, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. So let's see. We cannot address the elephant in the room, the meaning of life. But my first question is, when you're a relatively young guy, I mean, I would say you're too young to know the meaning of life, right? When did it dawn on you to start saying or writing a book about the meaning of life? When was it, or what occurred in your life that brought you to do that?
Sure. So yes, I am relatively young. I'm not like 70 or anything, but I started asking the question when I was 6. So I've been thinking about it for over 30 years.
A long time. Okay.
and the impetus for it was my father disappeared in the middle of the night when I was 5.
Yeah.
We've heard from him 6 months later that he moved to California and started a new life and everything. And then he wanted to see my brother and myself. So we went out there the following year. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember how I felt when he disappeared. I was just too young, you know, 5 is when you start to form memories.
Right, sure,
so I don't know. But I do remember when I went out there, we went out there for 3 weeks and 2 days. I'll never forget that amount of time. and then we flew back. When I flew out, it would have been the first time I ever left my mother. So I cried and cried and cried.
But so then was it the first time you ever flew on a plane?
Probably.
Yeah.
Not likely. So I, so yeah, so that was sad, but then I, you know, we had fun and I saw my father and my, my stepmother is actually really, really nice. And, so then when I flew back though, that first night, in my bed in the darkness without my father again, it felt like someone ripped my heart out of my chest. And I just felt empty and miserable and hopeless and like everything in the world just sucked. And I asked myself, I said, well, what's the point of all this? If we're going to suffer like this, because I was feeling excruciating pain.
Yeah.
And I have a part of my brain, I jokingly call it like, you know, the robot brain, part of my brain. And it was just like, that's a fascinating question. I wonder if you can answer it. And meanwhile, you know, I'm a 6-year-old, I'm crying my eyes out, but my brain is like processing that going, hey, that's an interesting question. I wonder if you can answer it. And so I studied every book I could get my hands on that talked about understanding how the world worked, how humans worked, what the meaning of life was, all these other things. So I studied psychology, you know, biology, you know, business, all these other things. And, you know, 20 years later, fast forward, I was leaving my company to go to a different one. And I was wondering what information I would impart on them. And I said, well, I've been studying this stuff for like 20 years. What would I say to if I had to give some sort of cool inspirational speech?
Okay, stop.
So that was the
You fast forwarded a bit too much because you said I was leaving my country. Now you did mention business. Okay. From the 5 and 6 years old, 6 year old, you went into business. I thought, wait, well, what does the business have to do with the psychology? Why did he put in business? And why, you know, so what brought you to a corporate world, business world? What kind of business?
So I in my professional life, I advise executives to help them solve their biggest challenges.
Okay, sure. And sure, but this is after the fact, after the studying, right?
Yes, studying. I went into business. I mean, it's not an interesting story. I just went in there because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I, you know, I studying all this, trying to figure out how things work, still don't understand. Okay, what am I supposed to do now? That's why a lot of people search for the meaning of life.
Oh, come on,
what am I supposed to do with my life?
Nathaniel, you've heard the expression. I haven't found the woman of my life, so I'm having fun with all of the wrong ones, you know? And so this is what's happened to you, right?
Yeah. So I went into management at first, and then because it was the most generic thing possible. And then I went into finance because you had to have a high GPA and I wanted to show how smart I was. So I graduated in finance, but at my last semester, I actually could have graduated in 3 years. I took so many credits per semester because I would just like be busy and be productive. And so I was like, oh, well, you know, I still have one. I had one class to take in finance to graduate. So I took all my other classes were psychology. And I got a 4.0 in my psychology because I had already known everything. I knew all the answers.
We've got this 6 year old who's growing really, really fast and he wanted to make money somehow. And he thought that maybe the money would come with something boring. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm speculating here. Now there's a line that's drawn some magical way between what you're talking about now and what you've written about. And there is a link, a spiritual link there, because it was the 6 year old boy, but it was his soul talking, right? His soul was thinking, oh, there's got to be more, you know? So now at what time did you specifically think that the idea of coaching, giving some form of consultancy to men or women in a corporate situation or in a business situation, the kind of things that you wrote about, the meaning of life, what was it that made you link those two together and then ultimately do the jobs that you're doing now, counseling?
Yeah. So your audience will like my story and how I fell into the organizational best practices.
Okay.
So I graduated, as I mentioned, I could have graduated in 3 years. I graduated in 3.5. So I graduated a semester early, was not expecting to do it. Mm-hmm. So I just put my resume on Career Builder. It wasn't very good. I had a finance degree. I didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I just sat around and didn't worry about it too much for a couple months. And then I did get a random call from, I'll never forget, Young Ai Lee was her name. And she said, hey, you know, this is the company that I joined back then was called the Corporate Executive Board. It got acquired, so it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, sure. You know, I don't have to do anything. And sure. I fell into this job where I did research. And it turned out I was really good at it.
Yeah.
And then I gave advice based on that research, on the findings. Mm-hmm. And I just took to it. I was like, oh, this is amazing. I all I do all day is, at first I was like, oh, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know.
I mean, research is just is very wide ranging, right? So how did you pinpoint what area?
It was complete luck. I mean, they hired me and I'll never forget. They said, Brooke referred you. And I said, yeah, Brooke. Yeah, I had no idea who Brooke is. So if your audience wants to think, oh, Brooke was God and it brought me into the research, I'm fine with that because that's very possible.
Okay.
I do not deny that because I never found out who Brooke was. As soon as I joined, I tried to find out who Brooke was.
Your guardian angel. Okay.
You got a $500 referral bonus if you refer to us. So like, hey, I want my like free lunch or whatever for getting you making $500. But anyway. So I went into that and I did it for 7 years and I was always going to go to like business school or do this or
what,
that.
What just years that's are what we talking did. About, Nathaniel?
Hmm?
What years are we talking about?
So that was my 21 to 28 or 9-ish. That was my how old I was. The time was 2003 to 2010-ish.
Okay.
But I finally woke up one day and said, okay, you know, Nate, you just got to decide something. Like, what do you want to do with your life? And I was like, well, what do I like doing? What am I good at? And I was like, well, you know, I like to learn. I like to teach. And then it just dawned on me that I was literally doing that exact thing in my job. Okay. So, you know, I have the chapter, I wrote in a part of a multi-author book and I wrote how to love what you do in your job. Mm-hmm. And I joke that it's like, it took me 7 years to realize I liked what I did. So, you know, here's how to figure that out. But yeah, that's how it all came to be. And it was like, well, I love research and I love advisory. But I want to do something. I was advising like CIOs and heads of enterprise architecture and applications, basically IT. I advised for financial services leaders years and years before, and now I do data analytics leaders. But I was like, you know, this is all interesting stuff, but I'm interested in it because I like to solve problems and I like to help people solve problems. Stop. So that was all I cared about.
Stop. Time out. Okay, now we're talking about you finding a purpose. Right?
Yeah.
Something you really liked and you really were good at it. It couldn't be the wrong thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. So you typically, of course, when I speak to guests, I have them fill out a questionnaire just to give me a feel of what they're, you know, like. And in that questionnaire, you listed a topic called injecting your life with more purpose. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hold you to that now. And what angle do you take with that notion of injecting your life with more purpose? How do you go about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, it depends what, if you mean like your work or if you mean your personal life or if you mean all of it.
I'm talking about a person comes to you, all right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure there's so many, they're not only men, there are women as well, right?
Yeah, most people who go into self-help are looking for help are women, yeah.
Okay, so if they're going, you said self-help, Is that what you're working with?
I mean, I don't like the term. I prefer psychology and philosophy, but
No. What I mean is self-help means that I'm part of a group and somebody coordinates the group. And the takeaways are takeaways that I myself take away. And so when you say advisory or counseling, I'm wondering if you see persons one-on-one or not.
No, I don't. I mean, I could, but, you know, I have my full-time job and then I write my personal time. So I spend all my time writing blogs and books and even doing videos now. So, I don't really have much time, for that. And I also don't do it, for money. I don't think I've made money yet. So it's
well,
not
usually
really about that.
Things that we do for free are the most interesting. That's my experience anyway. Okay. Sure. So let's say that, you have a group, who is sort of like a like-minded group, say it's a mixed group, men and women who have reached a position in their life, a place in their life where they're just dissatisfied. There's nothing else more descriptive about their feeling. And so you're leading this group and you're wanting to inject, you know, telling them or guiding them on how to inject more purpose into their mm-hmm. more their life with more purpose. Sure. How would you go about that?
Well, you know, I won't talk about the book because you want to lead into it, but
yeah, well, no, this is part of the book. If it's part of the book, no problem.
Yeah, well, the thing that I realized when I was trying to give that, you know, mythical speech of what I would do when I left my company is that I started to identify. I said, well, what would you have to know and understand to be successful? That's what it started as. And I was like, well, you need desire and belief and da da da. So I was going through this list. I was like, oh, this is interesting. But I said, well, what's the point of it all? Like, what's the point? Why do you need all of this stuff? And what are you trying to do? And then it hit me. Growth was the point. Like, that was it. And then eventually I started to realize, oh my God, you know, growth is the meaning of life. That is the meaning of life. So spoiler alert, everyone, that's the
Wait a minute. No, wait.
That's what you need to do.
That's the devil's advocate in me. Growth yeah. is the meaning of life. That, you know,
correct.
That's loaded for me as a therapist, as any kind of person. So growth, I mean, how much can you grow, right? I mean, let's say that I'm at peace. I'm a Zen mm-hmm. person, okay?
Yeah.
And I know that if I want pleasure in my life, it's something you work for. You work constantly at having, mm-hmm. you know, your that Zen character has to is constantly working for it, right? Now, when you say that growth, and I guess you can mm-hmm. equate that with growth, but I can't see, maybe you can enlighten me how mm-hmm. growth is the purpose of life.
Yeah, well, you have to dissect it logically and scientifically as to what you could actually prove. At least that's why the way I came mm-hmm. at it, because I wanted to be able to for atheists to read it and go, oh yeah, that's right. And I wanted someone who's spiritual or religious to say, oh yeah, that's right. I wanted mm-hmm. to be able to have it be universal. And you mentioned, so like, what would you do if you were with a group of people? I would tell them yeah. to, you know, seek growth opportunities, identify growth opportunities. That's a short answer to your previous question. But to this question about why is it the purpose, there are a bunch of definitions of what people mean as the meaning of life, right? And right. you got to watch out because people equivocate, right? They move the goalposts, right? So it's like, you say the point of life is growth. They're like, no, I don't mean that. I mean, the meaning is in the point. So they change the definitions. So you got to define your terms. Mm-hmm. So there are a bunch of definitions for the meaning of life, right? The biggest one everyone thinks of is the goal of life. But that's not a provable thing because goals are subjective. You decide yourself what you want your goal to be. So that you can't objectively define the meaning of life through the goal. The other one is like, well, what's the right way to live? You know, the best way to live. The Greek philosophers did that a lot, talk about like, what's the best way to live? And those are ethics, and you can't determine what the optimal ethics are unless you understand the goal. So those are also subjective. So it's like, you can't do that either. So those are out. So what's left? There are three that are actually objective. So there's the definition of life, because that's the meaning as in the definition. There's the purpose of life, what every organism is trying to do.
Yeah.
And then there's the what makes life significant. So meaning is in significance, right?
Okay, now
those are objectively provable.
Go through those, 1, 2, 3. If you don't
those
mind.
Are objectively provable. So if you look up the definition of life, you cannot define life without the word growth. It's in the definition every time. The capacity for growth is literally in the definition of life. You cannot define it without it. So it's part of its life's definition. It's the meaning of life. Second, the
it's not purpose. You just said the meaning of life is growth.
The meaning
but
is in
if
the
you
definition.
Look at life, they'll have growth. Those are two different things there. Okay, this is life. The advocate, the devil's advocate here in me. So what is life? You know, we get what life is. And yeah. I fail to see where the word growth would come in life. Unless you extend it to the meaning of life, then I could see where you would find growth in all of the definitions. Yes. Is that, you know, have I clarified that? Because you were saying...
No, if you look up the word life, just type in life in a dictionary, it will say... It is, the capacity for growth will be in there. Like literally, okay. you cannot define life without the capacity for growth. Like
okay.
that is what's in there. It's
okay.
part of its definition.
Okay.
But then the purpose.
Yeah.
What every organism intends to do. Well, we all know what are our basic biological drives, and this is universal. This isn't just for human
okay,
beings.
Okay, go
this
through them for our listeners. Go through those.
Well, let's start with humans. I don't want to bore people with single-celled organisms, but they do grow, and that's their purpose. So humans, you know, what are your basic biological drives? You want to eat, you want to sleep, you want to have sex, you want to drink, you want to seek safety and shelter.
So Now let's, if we change those words, there's pleasure, we could say growth, there's survival, right?
Yeah.
And so those are more, let's say, textbook meanings. All right, go on.
Yeah. So, we can go classic psychology with Freud. They say seek pleasure, avoid pain. But what is causing the pleasure and what is causing the pain? You have to go back one layer. Well, what's causing the pleasure is some sort of growth enabling activity. And what's causing pain is some sort of harmful activity. So growth and harm are the basic of all life on Earth. For human beings, you have sex to reproduce. You eat to grow bigger. You drink to survive. And survival is just not dying, not being harmed. So that's just the opposite of growth. So it's this, it's so, just so the two sides of the same coin.
Take a step back a second.
Sure.
We said, you're leading this group and injecting life with more purpose, right? So this more purpose, what is that inject? What's in that, injection there? Because these are the definitions, right? What would you need to tell someone or to suggest someone or get information from someone to then be able to advise them? Is what would you usually work with them?
Yeah. So the book has 8 components, and in the back of each chapter, because the 8 chapters, 8 components, the back of each chapter has a list of questions and then exercises to help you apply each concept to inject your life with more meaning.
So give me an example.
I'll just give you all 8 real fast in succession, short sentences, and then we can down deeper. So step 1 would be to identify growth areas where you want to improve.
Okay, where you want. Okay.
Second, we'll get to that in a second, but second is then to identify the experiences that you could have to grow in those areas.
Say that again, because that's a little nebulous for me.
Identify experiences you could have to grow in those areas. So if I want to learn, I go to school. That's my experience, right?
You could go.
If I want to learn, I could have someone teach me something, right? Okay. Or get a mentor or tutor, right? Uh-huh. So experiences are the medium through which growth occurs.
Okay.
So then the third one is desire. So you have to build desire for the growth areas, right? Because like, if you want to I live in Myrtle Beach. If you want a beautiful beach body, it's like, I want the beach body, but I don't want to go to the gym. You have to build the desire for both the outcome and then build the desire for the things that will get you that outcome.
Okay.
Because if you don't have the desire, you won't be motivated to do it.
Or the motivation.
So then you need to build the belief so that it doesn't squelch your desire.
All right, this is a strong notion. You have to build the belief. Okay, so tell us about that. What do you mean by belief?
Yeah, so belief is just anything you assume to be true. That's the definition of a belief. And a subset of that belief is knowledge.
Give me an example of a real person doing that, if you can. Or you yourself. Or make it up.
So I go to my kitchen and I open my fridge. So why am I doing that? I do that because I want to eat. That's the desire part. And then I believe that the fridge has food that I can consume. If I did not believe that the fridge had food I consume, I wouldn't go there. I'd go out to the store to get food and then put it in the fridge, right?
Okay.
And if I didn't want to eat, I wouldn't go to the kitchen because I wouldn't be hungry. So it's desire and belief combined that gets you an outcome because it drives you toward it. And then the belief, like if I really, really wanted to eat, even if I wanted to eat more than anything else in the world, but I believed, even if there was food, let's say there was food, it was stacked with food, but I didn't believe it was there. Would I go to the fridge? It's there that reality says that the fridge is full of food, but my belief says it's not. So I don't go to the fridge. Okay. So it doesn't matter what's real. It matters what you believe. And that's what's amazing to people. It freaks people out because they're like, no, it doesn't matter what you believe. It matters what's real. Like, no, it doesn't matter what's real. It matters what you believe.
Because so we're at number 4 or 5?
That's 4.
Okay.
5 is emotions. This is the biggest hot take I have in the book, which is happiness is not the meaning of life. It's objectively not. And you can prove it. In fact, we'll do it with you. So what's the purpose of going to school?
Sorry?
What's the purpose of going to school?
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, just.
Well,
just
there are many purposes. One, to make your parents happy. that is on the list of many students that go to school. That's, I have to say that is number 1. Objectively, I would say if the student is older and more mature, they would go to learn, you know?
Yeah, to learn, right? Yeah. Yes, you go to school to learn, right?
Right.
But notice what you didn't say. You didn't say, oh, you go to school to get an A. Well, why didn't you say you go to school to get an A? Isn't
that
the point?
I'm not interested in that.
Yes, exactly. And happiness, an A is an indicator that you have learned, right? It's not, you could cheat and then still get the A. So happiness is the same thing. Happiness is feedback to you saying, hey, you're doing growth enabling things. But just like the A, you can hack it. You can do drugs. You can have promiscuous sex. You can do all these things.
I don't agree.
That can make you happy.
You completely on this, but let's go on. Let's go on. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, but you could cheat to get an A, and you can cheat to feel pleasure.
Sure.
And that doesn't necessarily mean you're fulfilled. And that's why the pleasure and fulfillment thing is what trips a lot of people up. So that's why they say, oh, the meaning of life is to be happy. So then they go and they try to seek the next high, and then they're not really fulfilled.
Look, I'm going to throw you a curveball. I'm going to throw you a curveball. So you got to get into number 8 fast, because I'm itching to ask you another question.
No, please.
Sorry. So now we're on 5.
No problem with pushback. Oh, no. Yeah, 5.
Okay. Now let's get to 6.
Okay. So 6 is ethics. So you have to find the optimal way to get to that outcome. And ethics are rules you follow to attain optimal or maximum growth with minimal harm to others while you're doing it for yourself.
Okay.
So that's what I'd recommend, to find what the right ethics are. Mm-hmm. Support is number 7, and you get others' help attain better outcomes.
Support in the sense of others helping?
Well, I use the word support and not... there are 2 other words you probably think, well, why don't you use cooperation? Well, cooperation requires both ethics and support. So I didn't want to call it a compound term. And then the other one is, well, I want to call it like resources or something. I don't know. Or help or something. But support, you can get support from people. You can also get support from anything, right?
Okay.
Like you might have a dog that's emotional.
Outside support.
Yeah. I use support. Yeah, you could climb a ladder and it'll get you higher than if you were jumping, you know. So sure. I use support to be general about it. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is choice. And at the end of the day, everything you do in life is a choice. You choose to do it or not. And those choices shape your destiny. And if you don't have the ability to choose, it takes away a lot of the meaning. We can talk about that later. But those are the 8 things.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you ask me how to engage with someone, I would go through those and help them identify growth areas and experiences and then build desire, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Now, another, because you mentioned the role of faith and belief in meaning, right? Now, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The role of belief and faith and meaning for a person.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Do you want me to ask you any more questions?
I could just talk about it if you'd like. Or if
thing
you want me to do. Okay. Yeah. So, there's an interesting thing about belief. I tried to come to some sort of definitive conclusion, but unfortunately, that's one of the mysteries that I couldn't answer in the book, which is what's the line between believing in reality, what's real, so that you don't jump off a cliff and flap your arms thinking you can fly and die, and believing that anything is possible in the future so that you can maximize your potential. I don't know where the line is. I just say that is I can best describe it is believe in reality so you don't hurt yourself. Believe in what's possible so you don't limit yourself.
Well, I'm thinking that the belief is one thing because you put a slash, you know, the role of belief, faith in meaning. I mean, those are 2 different things, belief and faith. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, what I loved about the biggest personal realization I had writing the book was the belief chapter, because I was raised a Methodist and then Catholic, and then I kind of became an atheist and was kind of like on the borderline of like the what they call new atheism, which is not I personally don't recommend because they're kind of just jerks about it. But I actually, when I wrote the belief chapter, there's something you absolutely need to have. You need to have faith. And what is faith defined as? Faith is defined as the belief in the potential for a positive outcome without or despite evidence. You have to have that.
Okay,
because I can get hit by a bus tomorrow. So why am I not
why
living
as
if I'm going to get hit by a bus?
Why?
because otherwise you wouldn't do anything. If you didn't believe that the future, your future was positive, you would just, I mean, forgive me for being so blunt, but if you didn't believe that your future was going to get any better, you'd kill yourself. It's that simple.
Okay.
I mean, that's why you need the belief.
To have faith.
Yeah, you have to have faith. I'm not saying you have to have faith in a God, although if folks listening, that's how they get their faith. I actually write, and someone misinterpreted it, but I wrote, God is one of the greatest sources of faith, because if you don't believe in yourself, if you feel at times you don't believe in yourself, you can believe in something or someone. And someone took that as like, oh, that's not the only reason why people believe. I'm like, I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying it's a great way to sustain your faith.
Okay,
is to believe
let me
in
ask
something
you
else.
This brings me to ask you this question.
Yeah.
Because of the work that I do, yeah. I know that there's a limit to what we can know. You know, I'm a psychic medium. But I know that there is a limit to what I, as a human, can know and will be given information about. How does that sit with you? Do you
what the fact that you're a psychic, or
no,
or the fact that you're getting information?
I don't care what you think. No,
like great. No, wish I had that ability. Sure.
The fact that
I don't, but I wish I did.
The fact that there is a limit, that we are not meant to know everything.
Oh.
Can you accept that? Do you like, I mean, is that okay for you?
No, I think it's great, because it actually aligns with everything I documented very well. Because a lot of people, when I say the meaning of life is growth, the biggest pushback I'll get is, no, Nate, I mean, what's the final point? And I usually make this joke. There's this video game called Civilization, where you build a space shuttle and fly to Alpha Centauri. And then when you get there, the credits start rolling. And so I always joke, oh, yeah, the point of life is to build a spaceship and then fly to Alpha Centauri, and then you win. Because the reason why I joke about that is because no matter what you say, no matter what it is you say, that the meaning of life is the goal. The goal of life is, someone will say, and then what?
Yeah, of
and
course.
The beauty of growth being the meaning is that answers all the questions, because growth is eternal. Growth is never ending. Growth continues forever. So there is no end. So there is no and then what? Because and then you grow again. And then what? And then you grow more. And then you grow more and grow more. So the idea that you are not meant to know everything, I actually sits very well with me, because growth is limitless. So there's always something new to learn. There's always something new to know. Yeah. There's always something new to explore. It will never end, period.
Okay,
and even if you believe in spirituality, it would never end even beyond now.
That brings me to the question of the topic that you mentioned about commonalities in belief systems.
Yeah.
And what angle do you take to talk about that? What is your perspective, or what have you found in your research on that?
Yeah, I mean, my personal belief, based on the professional research I've done, is that all belief systems have to address the eight things that I wrote. They have to address the eight concepts I wrote in the book. They have to, because they're what make your life have purpose. So if you have a belief system, even if it's, whether it's atheism or Catholicism or whatever, you have to have an opinion on these eight things.
Okay.
Because they are, so like, for example, belief, right? So you have to address beliefs, right? So
you list science, law of attraction, religion, spirituality, right?
Yeah.
What is a commonality between the law of attraction and science?
Yeah, it's the eight things. So like, for example, if you want to succeed in life, an atheist would tell you, well, you have to want a goal badly enough, and then you have to believe in your ability to attain it, and then you have to go after it, right? That's what they would say. If you talk to a law of attraction person, they would say the exact same thing with one minor difference. They would say, you have to want something badly enough, you have to believe you can have it, and then you don't have to do anything. The universe will bring it to you, but you need to take inspired action. So you only need to take action when it feels right to you, when you feel the impulse to do it. You don't just have to go and push. Whereas an atheist would say, well, you got to work through all the pain and all that, all the adversity and push through it. And the law of attraction person would say, no, actually, you don't have to do any of that. When you're inspired to do it, it won't be any effort.
What about science?
It'll be great.
What about science?
Well, science would say that growth is meaning life. It's literally in the definite scientific definition of life. So they would say that you're supposed to grow, reproduce, and then you carry on your genes, and then you die, and then your genes carry on. And so they would say the same thing. And they would say that you have biological drives to sustain your life. That's a desire. And then you have an understanding of the world that protects yourself, which is belief. So they literally have the same concepts. The most interesting one, though, is ethics, right? Because ethics are the hottest topic, even today, right now, with all the in the U.S. with all of the rulings on the in the court rulings, all politics is applied ethics. And so now here's the thing: most people have the same ethics, so it's weird how everyone argues over some of these hot topics. But here's the thing: it's not that some people are ethical and others are not. That's what political parties want to frame it as: we're good and they're evil, right? That's what they want to say. But the truth of the matter is, the real conflict in ethics is a difference in prioritization of ethics. Mm-hmm. So, like, and that conflict, the never-ending conflict in politics, is very simple conflict. I should be able to do whatever I want, aka individual freedom and liberty, right? And you can't do whatever you want because it might cause harm, or the more recent one is it might inhibit the overall well-being of others. And they're taking that really to extreme today, where it's like, well, even if you say something that might hurt someone's feelings, and that's harm, and so you shouldn't do it, right? So they're going really far on that. But those are the two things. Everything is individual liberty, public safety, or well-being, right? And that's the conflict. And so when you have a conflict of ethics, it's not, I believe that you should be able to kill millions of people, and other people say I don't, and therefore you're evil, and I'm not. Like, it's not like that. It's always like take the hot topic of abortion. It's, you know, it's I should be able to do whatever I want with my body, but there's another body there inside that doesn't it have a right to live? And the answer is, well, those are two conflicting.
Then there's the Supreme Court body. Then there's the Supreme Court body that rules.
So the group has to decide, well, which ethics takes precedence. Okay. And some people say, well, once there's another living organism involved, you can't hurt it now because it has rights. And then the other one says, well, but it's my body, so you can't do anything. You can't stop me from doing whatever I want with my body. And look, I'm not going to answer the question today because I don't want to bias anyone, but I'm just saying that's the conflict of the ethical prioritization.
Versus evil. After hearing everything that you've said, and after knowing a little, you know, learning a little bit about you, I see a really big problem here.
Sure.
What is it? Well, we've heard the word growth 1,000 times. And that, if I have to make a word cloud of what we just said, growth would be big compared to the other words. And then you have this book, The Meaning of Life. Mm-hmm. And if growth is life, after you write a book called The Meaning of Life, where is there going to be a next book? What is there's no other topic. What other topic can you choose to grow?
that's the problem. You're worried about my ability to write another book. I appreciate that.
Because it's not in line with what you're saying. You have another book somewhere?
I've got two books in my brain, but it's going to take a long time. It took me 7 years to write the first one. So
well, I mean, that's how long it takes.
So I got two. One is if someone actually gave me the idea, and I'm so it feels so dumb, but I'm going to admit it because it'd be wrong not to. So I was just sitting there, and we have this paper type at my where I work, and it's like trying to like be different and kind of for future looking. And they said, Nate, why don't you take what you know from your work and what you wrote in your book and put them together and talk about how to make organizations feel more meaningful and purposeful. And I'm just like,
the individual to the, of course.
Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. Like, how did I not think of that? So I've been working on that recently. I'm writing, I'm basically just taking my last book and I'm rewriting expanding it where I take it, the same drivers.
So what's
and
the
then
next
say,
book? What's the second one?
The next one, I have another one. I wrote an outline for, but I don't know if it'll take me years to figure it out.
Try me. Tell me.
It'll be a book on truth. I have a list of understanding what truth is and why people care so much and those sorts of things.
It's like, I come from an academic world, right? And one day I went to see this huge in my field of linguistics, social linguist, and I went to see him. He was in Barcelona at the time, and we sat down. He took time away from his, you know, much older and much bigger and much greater than I could ever be, and he took time, invited me for a drink. We sat, talked for about an hour. And he thought I was coming to see him to get my stuff published. And I didn't, that wasn't what I was there for, because I'm in Italy. So Barcelona's a hop, skip, and a jump from Italy, you know, an hour and a half flight. I said, no, I have plenty of places that publish my stuff. I was just wondering, and I said, how meaningful are some of the things that we do write. And he, you know, has his own journal, academic journal. And he said, look, if you want something meaningful, he said, write about logic. That'll take you into your next life. Like you just said, truth. And it reminded me of that talk that I had with this professor, this older professor. He said, logic, you could go on and on, because truth is never ending. So you've got yourself your hands full with that one.
Yeah, but I have a great outline. I'm really excited about it. I just have to go do all the research and everything. But like I break down truth to the different components, because I'll give you an example. What is truth? And so there are two, speaking of ethics and competing political parties and all this, I mean, there are these two definitions of truth that people are using. There's the truth, which is some sort of absolute objective reality. And then there's your truth, which is becoming more popular. That's like, well, you know, I don't have your lived experience, so I don't know what your truth is, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, which one's correct? It's like, well, they're both correct, because, there are different definitions of reality. One is physical reality, which is objective. That's the one definition. And the other ones, well, you know how you said they live in their own reality? Like,
yeah, I know. We could argue about this, Nate. We can argue about this. Right. If I don't see the tree falls in a forest, or I don't hear it, it doesn't fall. That's the truth, you know? And who knows? Who tells me, you know? So for me, truth is always subjective, but I don't want to open up an argument here.
Oh yeah, no, you were just asking me about like, how would you address that?
Yeah. I like this idea of truth. It's going to take a long time to get that around, wrap your head around that one, I think. But that's great. Yeah. I'm glad you're growing.
Yeah. There's always something else to do. That's the thing. And people think that like, once you're done, you're done. And it's like that you always move on to something else. I always say, you know, when Peyton Manning or soon to be Tom Brady, when they retire from football, the greatest, you know, quarterbacks ever. And they don't just like go, okay, well, it's time to take you back in the back of the shed and, you know, and kill me now. It's like, I'm done. Peyton Manning's a pitch man. Tom Brady's going to go be a color commentator or a booth person. He's getting paid $350 million to do that. In fact, getting paid more to do that than he ever did playing football in his career. So like, amazing how like, oh, well, once you're done doing the thing you're meant to do or whatever, like, are you done? It's like, no. Tom Brady literally made a deal that will make him even wealthier from that than he ever did playing, even though he's considered to be the greatest quarterback ever.
I'll
so
this actually,
it's amazing.
I recently started studying Portuguese because I love the language. It's just particular, right? And of course, I recently took up piano again because I'm, you know, used to study piano. And I found a Portuguese vocalist who I love. And I found the sheet music. And so I'm here belting out Portuguese with my piano. And boy, but I'm not growing that fast. But boy, am I having fun.
Yeah. But yeah,
Nate, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with me and for our listeners in Multiple Voices. I really appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.